Boop, beep, beep, boop. Catchy jingle? We need a catchy jingle.
Catchy jingle. This is the part where we put in the jingle. Snappy, snappy words and songs. Makes you want to buy these products. La, 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 la. I know what you're thinking, Kavi. I know you're thinking.
What am I thinking?
I have earlobes with holes in them that I like to stuff little sparkly things into, like earrings. What you got for me now, Science Socks?
I mean, that's perfect because Science Socks has like the perfect things to shove in your tiny ear holes. They have James Webb Space Telescope tiny things that you can shove in your ear holes. They have Mars Lander things that you can shove in your ear holes. They even have, get this, they what? Even have space shuttle shaped bits of meteorite that you can shove in your ear holes. Tell me where else you're going to find that.
Head to toe, Science Socks has literally got you covered. It's fantastic.
It's wild. Although I wouldn't say head to toe. I would say head and toe. Nothing in between.
Well, they do have a really cool umbrella that looks like the parachute for the Perseverance of the rover, which you hold with your hand, which is middle-ish, but then it's over your head. Whatever. Go to sciencesocks.com/nerd. sciencesocks.com/nerd. And if you purchase anything from that URL, 10% of all proceeds go to STEM programs to help kids learn science.
Amazing. 10% of your purchase could be going to a STEM charity. Fantastic. I love it. Makes me happy.
All right, everyone. Hope you visit that shop. Enjoy, and many cozy footwearings to you.
You are listening to a Science Actually production.
Going to be easy. If those grid bugs get us, we've had it.
Oh no. He's frozen in coffee.
You ever like hold your face like really hard, but you start hearing your blood pumping in your ears?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I
hate
doing.
When that happens.
That's what I was doing. Yeah.
Just frozen.
Oh,
reminds me of the silly faces I used to make as a kid and my parents.
So that's why it looks like that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The wind did change and my face did freeze like this. I feel like that's really great audio content, right?
I think it's top quality. I really do. I'm thinking, yeah, that's it.
People don't need to be able to see.
That was the missing ingredient. Making that joke that your face is going to stick like that. That's what's been missing. Welcome to the stratosphere. We've been launched. That's it.
I love it. I love it. A face, a mother, only a mother could love, and a face for radio. Yep. That's why I became a radio astronomer, actually.
A face a mother, only mother can love. Looking at a star, only an astronomer can love.
Like when people say that brown dwarfs are failed stars. It just feels so harsh and judgmental.
I don't think
you're a failure.
And it sucks. I finally discover a star and it doesn't work.
It's doing its best.
It's doing its best. Come on, buddy.
What's great is that like you find these things that are either like they're generally from a scientific perspective extremely cool and impressive and interesting, and like as I've discussed before on the show, like you don't get to name them after yourself. Stars are just named according to, you know, the instrument that found them and their coordinates in the sky. Like a, you know, boring phone number sort of thing. But what they will do is they will name a rock after you if you're a successful enough scientist. They'll just like name an asteroid after you at some point. It's like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
I found a star that's doing all this fancy stuff. And in return, I have this rock.
You need to find a rock.
But I don't do it for the rocks. I do it for the science, because I do love the science. That's why I'm here.
I do like the science.
That's our rule here. Yeah. We are here for the science, and we are especially here because this is Science Actually Presents the Nerd and the Scientist for another week, another episode.
Another episode. What is this? Episode 54.
Yes. We have 54 already.
52 was the double guest of Emily and Bruce. Then 53 was Crawford.
Yes, Courtney. Yes.
Courtney. Okay. Thank you, Courtney. Cool. And then that's us. Hello, everybody. Whew.
Yeah, we've been
sorry to keep you people bored with nonstop guests and excitement and hearing from people who have done amazing things. We're going to bring it back down.
And just level setting.
That's it. That's it. We're recalibrating ourselves to just two incredibly handsome, funny guys who like space. Whew! What a run. And we're not even done. Yeah. I love it.
We still have such an incredible run of fascinating guests coming up. And we haven't even done the open call. Oh, I was meant to do an open call. And I'm going to do this soon. So if you are a scientist or a massive nerd, keep an eye out for a guest submission form that I'm going to circulate soon, which I totally forgot about. But you can suggest guests. Yeah.
Oh.
I feel like we spoke about this.
Yeah, I know we have, but I'm just trying to add a little something.
I'm sorry. I jimmied up your jam.
Sorry to
yeah
you.
But
go
it, all good. It's been an incredible run of guests, and we only have even more incredible guests or equally incredible guests continuing to come, but yeah, I thought it would be good to just maybe take us back, take a little chill pill, remind our audience of our roots, where we came from, and just you know, you and me, Benjamin. You and me. Just having a chat. A little chit chat. Yeah.
I'm going to shoot the chat a little bit.
Yeah. We'll shoot the chat. I think the only topic that might tie this episode together coherently will be bugs. And that's purely coincidental, because we had some small software bug with the recording platform in the previous two episodes, and Benjamin and I were chatting about that in our private messages, and then immediately after I responded to that, Benjamin says, okay, so what are we going to talk about in the next episode? And I said, bugs.
Bugs.
Why not? Yeah, they're everywhere. There are billions of them. Sure, lots to talk about. And then this guy over here went off and did like a thesis.
A bug thesis. It was the funniest thing. What are we going to talk about next week? I don't know, bugs. Done. Challenge accepted. And then I did a little digging. And holy moly, there have been so many bugs sent to space. There have been so many bugs that caused very famous events to occur in space, and like bugs in software. And it's, why not? Let's I thought we could just go through a few funny little things.
Sure.
That have to do with bugs in space. It'd be great.
Space bugs.
I wanted to use like the intro music from the Muppets Pigs in Space. And I want to see if I can kind of change that to Bugs in Space. But it didn't work.
I feel like we'll have a good few references in this episode that could provide some great intro music.
I'm sure we will. We'll come up with something.
Yeah. But let's jump right in.
Kavi, do you know what the first bugs were sent to space? And these were actually the first living animals ever launched into space.
Okay, so it wasn't the monkey or the dog.
Nope.
I'm guessing it was a bug.
It was a bug.
A bug of some kind. Was it a fly?
Was it a fly? It was a fruit fly.
A fruit fly, nonetheless.
Little containers of fruit flies sent up in a V-2 rocket in 1947 on board a United States a mission just to see if something can go up there, interact possibly with cosmic radiation, come back and still be alive. And sure enough, the fruit fly survived. They were recovered after parachuting back to Earth, and they're just fine.
Whoa, hold on a second.
No, I know where you're going. Yes, they manufacture these tiny little parachutes, for each individual little fly. And it was great. They did play Flight of the Valkyries. It was really cinematic, and they were just coming down.
But it was like a buzzing version of Flight of the Valkyries, right? For the little flies.
Yes, that actually
happened. Okay, in their tiny, tiny parachutes. Cool. Okay, I'm glad we're on the same page. fascinating.
They were in a container, and the container parachuted.
Right, and the container had
like our vision holes way better.
Poked into the top of it with a fork.
So they can breathe.
There was somebody at NASA for a brief period whose job was like chief fork engineer.
So funny. You gotta get these critters to space. They need to breathe. Pop, 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 pop. They probably have some really unique $15,000 titanium fork that's used specifically for poking holes. Yep.
Okay, that's the first one.
Another fun one was cockroaches.
Yes.
They went up to space on Apollo 12.
Mm-hmm.
And what the idea was, NASA was going to expose them to lunar dust just to see if it was toxic. They actually tried to feed lunar dust to the cockroaches and see if they would die, get sick, or anything like that. And they were fine.
I have a question.
I hope I have an answer.
If you're choosing a creature, a living organism, to test the toxicity of a certain material, why would you choose a creature that is like well known for being able to survive basically anything?
My question for this, along those lines, this was Apollo 12. We sent humans on Apollo 11 to actually get covered in lunar dust. And then we sent Apollo 12 with cockroaches. Let's see if it's toxic. Dude! You're sending men number 4, 5, and 6 along with these cockroaches.
Neil came back. He's like, I've had this rash since the flight, and I feel like it's got to be the lunar regolith. And that's just like, oh, we have to indemnify ourselves somehow. What can we do?
Speaking of bugs and Apollo, one of my favorite little itty-bitty side stories about Apollo is when Neil and Buzz and Michael Collins came back from Apollo 11, the first one to go to the moon, and they were kept in isolation in their little vehicle when that transferred them directly from, you know, the little helicopter. They rode it back to NASA, and then they took that little vehicle and drove them to the little sealed off building that was sealed from the outside so they could just be observed to make sure they didn't bring back any contaminants from the moon, blah, 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 blah. And so they had the run of this building to just run around, exercise, you know, move about freely instead of being inside of a pod. And the story goes that Neil and Buzz were just jogging around the hallway, one floor of this building, which has been sealed off from the outside world. And there were ants, speaking of bugs, crawling across the floor. So that's when they realized none of this really matters. The bugs are getting in. That means something is getting out. It's just very buggy. So, hey, that's
a fun thing. I'm just picturing like the security guard late at night who realized that when he noticed a trail of like bioluminescent irradiated ants coming out of this building.
That would have been cool. That would have been cool.
Okay, cool. So we have lots of very real bugs involved in early spaceflight. As we go through, like, surely they just transition to using larger creatures that were closer in physiology to humans, right? Or just more bugs.
We mentioned Apollo, well before Apollo, the chimpanzee that you mentioned went up, Ham, I think his name. And the Soviets launched dogs up into space, a couple stray dogs that they found, and they cleaned them up, made them healthy, fed them good. Off you go. So yes, they had lots of larger things before these insect type experiments or issues came about. But yeah. There's some weird ones. Skylab 3 in 1973. Along with astronauts sent up to Skylab, they were sent up with mealworms. And they wanted to just see how space radiation exposure could affect these worms. And the astronauts, in the name of science, of course, decapitated some of the mealworms just to study their regenerative abilities in zero gravity. I think they just ripped off their heads because, they're bored. But the weird thing is, not only did the mealworm body regenerate a head in some cases, they regenerated multiple heads, which is freak show. Very small, not too scary, but
it's like tiny hydras.
Some tiny hydras, yes. And so, some of the theories are that microgravity disrupted cellular signaling responsible for proper regeneration, or there were random mutations that were suddenly triggered in front of people's eyes because of exposure to space radiation. They don't really know, but I think it's the microgravity thing is more likely. And very cool. Astronauts go up to space with worms, come back with worms with multiple heads. Science.
Why are they called mealworms? Because when you first started saying that, I was like, I mean, surely you can't make a meal out of a whole worm. Like, I know that there are budgetary constraints at NASA at the time, but...
Yeah. No, I'm sure they, mix it up with, coffee or something.
Protein coffee. Yeah. Worms go well with coffee, as we all know from Men in Black. Naturally. I think now is about the time in our episodes that we normally do a little adskipoo. I am thrilled as always to talk about today's sponsor, Science Socks. It's just like if you like rovers, if you like the James Webb Space Telescope, if you just like flaunting just like how much you love everything that's nerdy, Science Socks is just the perfect one-stop shop for adding a bit of galactic flair to your life. Yeah.
If your feet are cold and they're smart feet, you want to show that off and warm your feet at the same time.
Yeah.
I agree. They're awesome. I have one pair of socks that I spray painted on E=MC². It's true, actually. This is true. Those were my science socks, and they're so the production quality are so poor. And they're so not
are they good. Actually socks, or you just they're like spray painted your entire
and
foot?
I wore them out, and I think it's the funniest thing that our sponsor is Science Socks. They make these awesome socks with all the cool things that Kavi said. Just all sorts of science iconography that's just beautiful. Wonderful patterns, yeah. Wonderful colors. And jewelry, too, for those of you who are not into the whole socks thing. You got your,
if you're a nerd or a scientist,
covered.
But if you prefer going barefoot, and so you're like, oh, science socks is not relevant for my life. The other side of the science socks coin is nerdy jewelry, like JWST, James Webb Space Telescope, mirror segments either on a necklace or earrings. You can also get a space shuttle earring set made out of real space rock from space that come to Earth. So cool.
I'm not gonna I don't want to let any episode go without mentioning the JPL parachute umbrella. I love that thing. It's the coolest thing. It's bright. It's so pretty. Cool. It's got a hidden message. Keeps you dry. What more do you need?
Yeah. And to get that and all of the other things that we've mentioned and much more, you can go to sciencesocks.com/nerd. That's sciencesocks.com/nerd. Yes. And if you do that, 10%, if you use that link, 10% of your purchase will go towards a STEM charity. There are a range of STEM, that's science, technology, engineering, and math, charities that Science Socks works with, and 10% of the proceeds of every purchase will go to one of those charities. So, yeah.
ScienceSocks.com. We have pre-recorded commercials for ScienceSocks.com. We just riff them instead because it's more fun.
I told Daniel that we would do that. I'm like, listen, we'll throw in the ad, but we've got to keep doing the improv. The people come for our ridiculous improvised ads, and we can't disappoint our audience.
Can't explain. That was actually back to bugs.
Back to bugs.
We covered actual living bugs. Now we're going to talk about software bugs.
Soft.
If any of you have a job in which coding is part of it, you're familiar with how catastrophic one misplaced character can be. And such is the case for Mariner 1 in 1962, the hyphen that destroyed a rocket. There was a missing hyphen in the rocket's guidance software, which caused it to veer off course. A negative was now a positive, and therefore NASA had no choice but to destroy the spacecraft just a couple of minutes into launch when it was going the wrong way.
I feel like you're so right that this is par for the course for anybody who works with code, but like, I remember when I was first like working with MATLAB, when you write lines of code in MATLAB, you need to put a semicolon at the end to kind of do the command, but not just like endlessly loop and print out stuff and then basically crash your computer. Like, that was the worst case scenario. You just have to control alt delete and end the task. Otherwise, bad things happen to your computer. But this is like multi-million dollar explosion over the Pacific.
And they're not even cool explosions. They're just fireball down. That's it. You think NASA and other space agencies would, just for shits and gigs, line the insides of their rockets with like little fireworks. And just in case the thing blows up.
Yeah, just like fireworks and confetti, make it like a gender reveal.
I'm not saying I want rockets to explode, and I want every single space traveler to be safe and come home safe. I'm just saying, when you take into account the many, many, many millions of dollars it costs to launch these things, a good fireworks display for 10 grand is pennies, and you can just tape it on the inside. And
the problem, you know what the problem is, right? The problem is when the mission is going fine And then the fireworks go off. And
look at that one guy at the range button, the range control guy's like, man, 4th of July was canceled again.
It'll be like the first successful landing of humans on Mars. And they touch down. And the moment that they do, suddenly it's just like a Roman candle. But we feel kind of fitting, though, to celebrate the landing.
I think it would be very fitting to celebrate the landing. I can't believe that's actually going to happen. I believe it will happen. It's going to happen.
We should write a letter. Yeah.
Okay, I will write a nice long letter. Please go to Mars. Anyway, 1965. Let's go back to 1965.
Yes.
Gemini 5. There was a programming error in the onboard computer that triggered an erroneous mission abort warning. It was a very good thing that the astronauts did not act on it, because it was a fake abort warning. Nothing was wrong. They saw nothing was wrong. Just the abort thing just turned on. They could tell from all their training. It turned on for no reason. And so that, okay, and some communication with Houston, they just continued writing. And luckily, they did not act on it, and they made the space just fine and came back.
Nice. It's a pleasant bug story.
Yeah, it's a nice little bug story. Let's see. For Apollo 11, let's go back to Apollo, the big day. Buzz okay. and Neil are actually descending and about to land on the moon's surface for the very first time. Mm-hmm. And for big fans of the Apollo missions and space history, there's the famous 1202 alarm and the famous 1201 alarm.
Because they were landing at lunchtime. The
executive overflow right. alarm. And basically all I was saying is that the computer is running out of space. It can't handle so many tasks. And the overload was caused by a radar switch was turned in the wrong position. It was a rendezvous radar meant for docking with the command module when they came back. They did not need that. So it should have been switched to off, but it was switched to on. So there was a part of the Apollo 11 spacecraft lander's brain, in a sense, trying to connect with the command module, which it wasn't trying to do at that moment. And that was a little worrying. Too much work was happening.
Yeah, it would have been freaking out, right? Because if you have a radar to tell you when you're getting too close to the command module when you're trying to dock, and yeah. you have that on while you're trying to land, it's basically saying, like, you're getting too close to the thing. Slow down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, like a parking sensor when you're backing into a spot next to a wall. Yeah.
Exactly.
Wild. But luckily, then you had to ignore them. Or debug it, I guess I should say. Or debug it.
But yeah, luckily there's a guy there who knew the programming alert section of the whatever manual quite well. And so when that alarm came up, he was there on hand. Knew what it was, ready to tell them exactly, don't worry, keep going, I know what this is, you're fine. And sure enough, they were.
Nice. Yeah.
What else you got? Bugs.
Show me what you got.
Show us what you got. Let's see here. One of my favorites is the Mars Climate Orbiter in 1999.
Oh, no.
And it is the Metric versus Imperial disaster. I love this thing. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it.
It's painful.
Yes. The Mars Climate Orbiter was going to go to Mars and
make sense.
It and just start scanning its atmosphere and in its environment and try to, you know, just get any more information about Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And Lockheed Martin, who built the spacecraft, provided thrust data in pound force seconds. And NASA's navigation team at the JPL were expecting Newton seconds in metric. And so since nobody bothered to see that that was happening and nobody bothered to make any conversions of the units. When the spacecraft arrived at Mars, it was about 100 miles too low, and it couldn't deal with it, couldn't correct for it. The atmosphere, although it's thin on Mars, if you're 100 miles closer to it, it's considerably thicker than 100 miles away. And that thing just went straight down to kablooey. Fun, it's been found, actually. The impact for this thing has been found in the year since the impact crater. But very, very, very
how,
funny.
How big of a crater are we talking?
Not a big crater. Just a small little
crater. Not a big crater?
Not a big crater.
I mean, it might be small if you think that you're talking in feet, but it's actually in kilometers. bane of my existence. Yep. Working
the crater is like code. 500 meters wide and 50 feet deep. There you go. I don't know how big the crater is. I just made it up so I can use both.
Speaking of bugs and craters, I feel like maybe this is on your list, but like the Space IL mission, the Barry Sheep lander, that hits both like real bugs and software bugs.
It
right?
did. I have it. I have it on my list. Yes.
I'm jumping the gun.
Yes. The tardigrades. They're technically not bugs, but kinda. And they were aboard Israel's or Space IL's Bereshit lander.
Right.
Which was awesome. This thing was flying to the moon, had awesome selfies of itself, getting closer and closer to the moon. And it was carrying a small little payload of tardigrades on board. And yes, there's a bug in the system. They did not
I think the tardigrades were stowaways, right? Yeah. I think the actual payload, there was some like science instruments, right. I think maybe a magnetometer, a thing to measure the magnetic field. And also they had like laser discs with like all of human knowledge and like the Old Testament written on them. But the tardigrades were stowaways. But yeah, like the software bug, I think, was in the IMU. So basically, like, it's a little unit that measures the inertia, like an accelerometer or a gyroscope for the lander. And there was a bug in the IMU that basically... I think they could have tried to do the landing as is, but the decision was made that in order to restart that IMU, they would restart the entire kind of compute system. And then the problem is that when the system finally came back on, they were, you know, like 180 meters above the surface going at 800 meters per second.
Way too late. Yeah.
Yeah. There was nothing that could be done, unfortunately.
The tardigrades were actually indeed on there on purpose.
They were?
Yes. A few thousand of them in a small little resin disc. Dehydrated tardigrades along with DNA samples and books and other media that you mentioned. And if they survive, they should be fine. They are known for cryptobiosis biosis, and they can survive extreme conditions and could be reanimated if you simply add water. And I assume
just add water.
Just add water and I assume some heat and a couple other things. They are dormant if they survive, but not alive.
Yeah, add a cup of water and put them in a low temperature oven. 20 to 25 minutes.
Well, microwave if you don't have that kind of time, if you're impatient.
Or air fry. Air fry is also a good option. Yeah.
I can't stand the air fryer. What the food comes out so good.
but yes, so Space IL. Actually, I happen to have a Space IL badge right here that I got when I used to be involved with their education team back in the day. Yeah, so Space IL hit both real bugs and software bugs all in one.
Yeah, awesome.
Nice. Love it. All right, what else we got in the way of bugs? All things buggy.
The Spirit Rover. The endless reboot. There was a memory overflow problem with the Spirit Rover, and it entered into an endless reboot cycle. NASA thought it was broken, and it took them a while to figure out that was happening. And luckily, they were able to send a remote fix. And during one of the reboots, when it checked into NASA, it was getting a message from NASA. Mm-hmm. It made it stop doing that over and over and over. The worst kind of software glitch I can imagine happened in 2008 on the ISS. A software glitch in the Russian-built ISS International Space Station toilet caused it to stop working.
Ooh.
So astronauts had to make an emergency repair with spare parts sent up on the shuttle. The shuttle just happened to be coming up like a week or two after the problem happened. So for that short amount of time, they were able to get rid of liquid waste, no problem. But... I said but.
The tension is killing me. Well, what did they do with...
For a little over a week, is basically find anything that looks like a bag, and let's start bagging everything and storing it until we get a toilet and we can get rid of it proper.
Wow.
So there was a week of storage. Space Shuttle Discovery on mission STS-124 was given a last minute piece of cargo, which is just toilet supplies. And they brought it up, fixed it. There was a small little toilet on a docked Soyuz that could be used. But it was only meant to be used a few times, not for a space station-sized crew for a week and a half of constant use. So it was an emergency-only potty.
I mean, the Soyuz, from what I've seen, is like pretty small, so that emergency toilet would have been a tight squeeze. Like,
yeah, I mean... NASA and Roscosmos and now SpaceX, they are very, very crafty when it comes to how little space they have and cramming things into a small little area. SpaceX, all those Dragon capsules that go up there, they go with the bathroom. It's not just a big empty room. There's a small little bathroom that's tucked in behind a panel near the ceiling. So you pull back that panel, and out comes all the apparatus you need to relieve yourself and clean up. And there's even a handy-dandy little curtain. You just pull across the top of the spacecraft and you have a little bit of privacy, and you can do what you got to do, and that's it. And then everything tucks back into the wall. So, yeah.
I hope the curtain... A lot of space. I hope that the... Nice. I do hope that curtain has like metal rods to keep it in place, because otherwise if you're in space the curtain might just be like flowing up.
Oh my god.
Sorry. Toilet humor, can't beat it.
Toilet humor.
Nope. Okay, so we've covered bugs and we've covered software bugs and we've covered toilet bugs. What else? What's like, if you had to choose like one ultimate bug that's space related, what would you choose?
Oh my god.
And I'm relying on you here, because I know that you did, again, like a bug thesis.
I know.
You know all the bugs.
What's a bug? Hubble. Hubble was a big one.
Oh, yes.
So much work went into the $1.5 billion Hubble Space Telescope, and this is in $1990. So I'm sure that's like $1.501 billion today. I don't know. I'm not good at math. No, I'm sure it's worth a lot more today. $1.5 billion Hubble Space Telescope. All the work and all the testing, it went on a space shuttle ride to get it up there. And everything was just this incredible marvel of technology, and it was blurry. And so the lens itself, a physical lens itself, was the issue. So scientists here were writing all sorts of code to try to unblur the images, try to figure out how the where the blur came from, and if they can reduce the blur and get a sharper image. That didn't really work too well. So the ultimate glitch had to have the ultimate fix with another shuttle flight, bringing up a new lens and a spacewalk. And they had to capture the spacecraft, the satellite, and they had to open it, and take out the bad part, put in the new part. And this is by hand in space, so it's the idea of things being done, you know, to precision was a great concern. But turns out, worked out great. Worked out great. They fixed it
really in those great. Massive gloves, like you don't exactly have a lot of dexterity.
Oh, no.
And you're probably like sweating profusely while you're up there, out there. Yeah, that'd be intense.
Intense.
And probably the first guy who sort of like, wow, the universe is just so blurry. I wasn't expecting it to be so blurry.
I thought there'd be more stuff. Turns out, no.
Where's all the stuff, man? Okay. Yeah, that was a big oopsie. But thankfully, as I think we mentioned in two episodes ago, when we were talking with Emily and Bruce, like Hubble has continued to produce incredible science results to this day. So it was very much worth it. Even now with JWST being in operations, and it's, you know, very hard to get time on JWST, it's still hard to get time on Hubble because it's continuing to just be like a field leading telescope.
It's super impressive. It's a workhorse. Even it competes with even the latest and greatest still to this day. It's been up there for 35 years.
I think that's what Emily said. 35 years. Wild. Yeah, that's pretty
wild,
crazy.
Wild stuff.
Wild stuff. Speaking of wild stuff, I did notice something in your notes that I was kind of confused about. I'll let you tell folks what that thing is.
It's a funny thing. My father-in-law sends me links all the time. Hey, this is funny. And sometimes they are. And sometimes they are. But this one actually was, I didn't believe it was true. And then I looked it up and I read, like, yes, it is indeed true. I do not care for reality TV, but there was a time in the early 2000s where reality TV shows kind of had this theme that somebody's on the show who doesn't know it's all a scam. And everybody else that's on the show is completely in on the joke. This is not real. You are being made fun of. There was a British show in 2005 called Space Cadets. It was 10 episodes being aired in real time as they were happening across 3 weeks. A bunch of contestants won their spot on this reality TV show, but it's a reality TV show that's going to follow these people into space. They're going to go through training. They're going to go through physical training. They're going to go through written tests and study, long hours, hard work, They're going to, they visited the launch pad. They met the people in the control room. They went the whole thing, and they bought it. They bought it hook, line, and sinker, and they even boarded their craft, thinking, "Oh my God!" People strapped them in, the whole deal. The craft they boarded was a very elaborate capsule on top of all sorts of hydraulic lifts and such in a giant warehouse, and it simulated for them, similar to a roller coaster, like G-forces and lots of rumbling, and they went through the whole
launch.
Wow. And somehow the part I don't get, there was some kind of I obviously didn't watch the entire episode, but somehow they kind of tricked them into believing that they're able to walk around their capsule while they're in space instead of floating because of some technological whatever. And then when it was time for the big spacewalk to go out into space, and they open up the airlock, instead of seeing Earth from above, they saw a studio audience laughing at them. And it was just too good. Just too good. That's not really that's a bug, brutal. But it's mean. They each got 5,000 pounds for their trouble.
For their trouble of wasting like 3 weeks of their lives and being publicly humiliated. They should do a Where Are They Now and just see that like two of them have been camped outside of like the Johnson Space Flight Center for the last decade, begging to come in. We've been trained, I tell you, we've been trained.
Or even worse, like, you're all being lied to. You're being lied to, it doesn't exist. We went through it.
Brilliant. The Venn diagram of people who were participants in this show who are flat earthers. That would be brilliant. I wonder what that crossover is.
I wonder if a flat earther knows about that show and uses it as proof. See? They couldn't do it. It had to be faked.
It's a documentary.
Oh, oh my gosh. Flat earthers. Ain't they a peach?
Ain't they a peach? Just like a big old flat peach. Yeah.
Big old peach.
Big old peach. This episode has been a peach. I missed like just chit-chatting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's no bad dad jokes episode. I mean, that one was pretty stellar.
I am still getting good feedback about that show, and I don't know really? Why. I mean, even my friend Melody, who we had as a guest a while back, loved that episode.
She did.
The jokes were so bad.
For those of you who have not listened to all of our episodes, I highly recommend that you do so now. But if you don't do it, shame on you, number one. Number two, we did an episode once a while back where we literally just rattled off the worst jokes we could find. Space jokes we could find. I thought it was great.
Jokes that were so bad that I got banned from ChatGPT for a day for trying to generate even worse and worse jokes. And ChatGPT was like, no more. Please, no, make it stop.
ChatGPT has a tolerance level of only so much.
Yeah, only so much I can handle. But yes, definitely, folks, go back and listen to those episodes or watch them. You can see our lovely faces on the YouTube or the Tiki Toki clock app, if that's still available in whichever country you're listening from. And hey, we're all over the socials. You can find us. You can message us. Specifically, Benjamin, where can people find you?
You can find me under the name of Science, actually. Facebook is the big one. You can also find us on Instagram, Twitter, Threads, Mastodon, Blue Sky, LinkedIn, and as Kavi said, TikTok and YouTube. How about you, Kavi?
Yes, I can be found occasionally lurking on all of the social medias as @funfactscience. Yeah, you can find me there. You can send me a message and say, hey, I love your podcast. Or you can say, hey, I like your podcast, but you could do this, this, and that to improve it. We will accept any constructive criticism.
Love to hear that.
Non-constructive criticism. Non-constructive criticism just makes me sad. We haven't gotten any of that, other than that one guy, but on YouTube. But yes, folks, please, please feel free to reach out to us. Let us know what you think. And we'll see y'all next time on Science Actually Presents The Nerd and the Scientist. Trying to do that. There we go.
Oh, that was great.